It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. A recent story in the University of Georgia student newspaper raised concerns about how the school handles cries for help from students. The Red and Black says the university placed a student on interim suspension after she attempted suicide. Well, May is National Mental Health Awareness Month, and we've talked before on this show about the crisis in mental health for college students recently that's been growing for several years. We're joined now by attorney Scott Schneider, who heads the Higher Education Practice Group for Fisher and Phillips, and he joins me now. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. You know, this policy, which is not confined to the University of Georgia, there are a number of universities that can and will take the step of suspending a student after a suicide attempt. Why? What is the thought process behind that as far as the university would be concerned?
Yeah, I don't know a lot of what happened at the University of Georgia, but I'll speak to the issue broadly. You know, I would check your premise there. I'm not sure that I agree with you that at a lot of universities that the first step when a student commits or attempts to commit suicide is to involuntarily withdraw that student. In fact, for most universities, when they're dealing with an issue like this, a student who has attempted suicide, it's one of the biggest challenges that they're trying to manage. And there are all these constituents on campus that they're concerned about. Primarily, they're concerned about the student and can they provide an atmosphere on campus that allows that student to be successful, number one, and obviously not harm himself or herself. But we're also at universities around the country concerned with what is the impact of an attempted suicide on other students? You know, if someone tries to commit suicide in a residence hall, there are other students impacted by that. And what I would say is for most universities, these are incredibly complicated issues. And I think the best practice at schools around the country, you know, is you're working with the student who has gone through this. You're working with their parents, and you're trying to come up with a game plan that everybody is on the same page to do what's in the best interest of that student and the broader university community. And a lot of times what I have seen personally is that, you know, mom and dad and the student and the university agree that after someone attempts to commit suicide, it would probably be best for that student voluntarily to go home and get the mental health resources that he or she needs.
We did reach out, excuse me, for just one moment,
sure.
Scott. We reached out to the University of Georgia. They issued a statement. You can find the entire statement on Facebook. But here's an excerpt. It says, quote, "In cases when a student demonstrates behavior that poses an imminent threat of harm to self and or others, the Behavioral Assessment and Response Council, called BARC, in keeping with its mission, will assess the level of potential harm and determine the appropriate response based on balancing the individual needs of the student with the shared needs of the campus community. In cases when BARC determines a student is exhibiting behavior that directly threatens the student and or others, BARC may issue an interim suspension, removing the student from campus until BARC determines that the threatening behavior no longer exists," end quote. And it sounds like they're echoing what you were talking about there. Let me bring Victor Schwartz into the conversation. He's medical director for the Jed Foundation. That's an organization that's dedicated to preventing suicide among college and university students. Hi, Victor.
Hi, Celeste. Good morning.
It seems to me, you know, I thought about this quite a bit. And it seems to me that part of the reason for removing a kid from campus would be the thought process behind assuming that stress over being on your own for the first time, stress over classes and grades, that may actually be contributing to suicidal thoughts. Is that possible?
Well, that's certainly one of the considerations that schools make. So, you know, for a student who might have been struggling with depression or some other kind of mental health disorder for a period of time, in addition to the concern about suicide, in many cases they are lagging behind in their academic work. Their academic work may be a source of stress, but on the other side of that argument, in many cases, being in school, if someone has a good social support network, if someone is functioning adequately academically and socially, it can actually be helpful and protective to remain in school, even if somebody is struggling, as long as they're functionally doing well enough and there's a way of taking care of their mental health needs in such a way that you can have some sense that they're going to be safe.
This is all complicated, though, Scott, by what psychologists have described as an epidemic of mental health issues among college students. In fact, they did a study of data collected at almost 140 college and university campuses and found that students seeking help for mental health issues is outpacing the growth in enrollment by five times faster than the growth of enrollment. So how can universities even handle that kind of demand for mental health issues?
Yeah, I'd raise a couple of points. I don't know that the level or the percentage of students with mental health issues has increased over time. What has changed, I think, is the barriers to coming forward, the stigmas to coming forward. And so students now feel a lot more comfortable coming forward with these problems and seeking help. And I think it is a real challenge. You certainly have schools that have multi-billion-dollar endowments that can, you know, add staff and resources in their counseling centers. For most public institutions, which, you know, have been defunded by state governments to the point that their core academic mission is threatened in a lot of different programs, you know, adding staff to a counseling service to meet this demand is a real challenge. And so, you know, what I see a lot of universities doing in this regard is being very open with parents and students, managing expectations about what resources can be provided on campus and, you know, whether it's through insurance or whatever, creating relationships with outside providers to meet students' needs off campus.
Jed, how can a parent step in most effectively and efficiently? I have a student getting ready to go to college this fall. I mean, I wouldn't know which part is my responsibility in terms of letting him be independent and which part is the school's.
Well, so there are a couple of elements here, and I also want to just echo the comment that Scott made that some of what we're hearing about is actually good news, that we are in fact, it seems, making some headway in getting students to come forward and reach out for help when they're getting into trouble. And that is probably behind some of the increase in visits to counseling services we're seeing. You know, parents can play important roles at several levels. First, if a young person through their high school years has had a history of mental health problems, it's really essential to work with the local clinicians, therapists, any psychiatrist, psychologist who are working with a young person to make sure that there's a transition of care plan that's well thought out. It's important to remember for parents that once a young person is accepted to a college, the parent, the family can reach out to the school, reach out to the counseling service, the dean of students' office, and make sure that they're part of that coordinated plan with local clinicians so that there's a clear understanding of how any necessary treatment will continue. It's also important for parents to keep in touch with their kids and figure out what the appropriate balance of that is. You don't want to be checking in every 15 minutes unless there's really a crisis, because that conveys the sense that, you know, we don't trust that you're going to be able to manage and be okay. But there needs to be some understanding of how much connection, how much contact there is. And if a parent is concerned, it's also important to remember that confidentiality limits. If a young person is being seen at the counseling service may not be able to share information about the student, but they can always listen to a concerned parent. So if there is a concern, you know, contact the director of the counseling service or, again, the VP of Student Affairs or Dean of Students and let them know what you're concerned about.
Yeah,
they can take in that information. And as you hear, many schools have developed, you know, behavioral intervention teams or student of concern teams. And there are protocols in place in most places to follow up and monitor a concern around a student.
My guests are Victor Schwartz, the medical director for the Jed Foundation, and Scott Schneider, head of the Higher Education Practice Group for Fisher and Phillips. And Scott, at the point when a student has suicidal thoughts, which is different from a suicide attempt, there have been complaints, and we at this point we are not talking about the University of Georgia, we're talking about nationwide. There have been complaints from students that when they call their counseling, on-campus counseling, they have a 3 or 4 week wait time because demand is so high. What can be done about that? Is there anything other than more funding?
It's a great question, you know, and what I would say is, you know, there is obviously a difference between ideating about suicide, thinking about suicide, having thoughts, which is frankly surprisingly quite prevalent within that age bracket, and then an attempt, a credible attempt at suicide. You know, for students who are ideating, which, again, is a fairly healthy percentage of students, and let's say at a university with 20,000 students, you know, we're talking about thousands potentially who may be ideating. You know, there's probably not a university in the country that when a student like that comes forward and says, I want attention and I, you know, need a visit right this second, that I can't think of a campus counseling center in the country that could accommodate that sort of volume. And so, again, you know, what I'm seeing is obviously at most universities, very active student affairs departments, you know, maybe not with psychology degrees or psychiatry degrees, reaching out to those students, offering resources, whether it's in mindfulness practices and things like that, or, you know, honestly creating memoranda of understanding with outside providers that we can refer those students to, that those outside providers may be able to provide resources a lot quicker than campus counseling services. But I think at most universities, I have yet to hear a campus counseling service, no matter how well funded, that said, oh yeah, we have enough staff. They could always add tons more.
Nobody has enough staff, Celeste, and I think it's a really important point. But most schools, and when we work with schools, one of the things we try to get them to think about is how to create a triage system so that the person who's picking up the phone or setting up appointments will ask someone, is this an emergency? Or are you having thoughts of harming yourself? And that would then trip a more urgent appointment. Many, many schools also have urgent walk-in hours scattered through the day or the week, depending on the size of the service. So, you know, schools are sensitive to the students who have a really kind of immediate need. But
yes, and we'll have to leave it there, unfortunately. That's Victor Schwartz, medical director for the Jed Foundation, and Scott Schneider is with the Higher Education Practice Group, Fisher and Phillips. Obviously, a lot to talk about. If you or someone you know has thoughts of suicide, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Thanks so much, Scott and Victor.